From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, who is the blind cheek and how does he affect us? We'll talk about that with Peter Lance. Here's what's happening. An estimated 800 children in Europe have reportedly developed the sleep disorder narcolepsy after receiving a vaccination for the H1N1 or swine flu virus. Some 30 million people in 42 countries have received the vaccine made by the British drug maker GlaxoSmithKline. Because it contains a booster, drug regulators have concerns about the vaccines, and the shots have not been given here in the United States. 795 people in Europe have reported that after receiving the vaccine, they developed the sleep disorder, which can make normal life nearly impossible. You know the way I feel about some of these vaccines. So there you have it. A quick-thinking mother saved her son's life when she Googled his ailments. The 12-year-old in the United Kingdom had persistent headaches, poor vision, vomiting, so his mother, Sabina, typed into Google after the child was initially misdiagnosed. Sabina took him to another doctor because she had read online and suggested to the doctor, hey, he might have a brain tumor. Sure enough, he had a 2.5-centimeter tumor on the brain. Doctors said to the parents, he would have been dead within a week had it not been detected. He underwent emergency surgery. People who regularly take aspirin for many years, such as those with heart problems, are more likely to develop a form of blindness, according to researchers. A study of nearly 2,400 people showed that aspirin takers had twice the risk of age-related macular degeneration. This disease damages the sweet spot in the retina, obscuring details in the center of a patient's field of vision. The researchers said there was not yet enough evidence to change aspirin use. Taking low doses of aspirin every day does reduce the risk of a stroke or heart attack in patients with cardiovascular disease. Let's check in with Christian Wild, author of MyHeartBook.com, Hidden Causes of Heart Attack and Stroke. Christian, so what do people do who have been taking the 82 milligrams?
Well, this study, George, I think has been way overdue. Macular degeneration, the leading cause of blindness among people over 50 years of age. What happens is a formation of drusen forms in the eye, in the retina, and that's called dry macular degeneration. If that ever turns to wet macular degeneration, suddenly there's hemorrhaging in the eye.
Oh boy.
And the central vision is lost. Now, they will tell you that someone with wet macular degeneration will never go totally blind, but they will not be able to read. They won't be able to distinguish faces. They can't watch television, and they certainly can't drive.
Why from aspirin? Why aspirin?
Aspirin thins the blood, and consequently, the dry macular suddenly is at risk of bleeding through and hemorrhaging and causing the problem. As long as the disease remains dry and in that state, it is somewhat stabilized. If it starts to bleed, it will destroy the central vision.
So you should keep going to an ophthalmologist. Big question, though, if people have heart problems, they've been taking the 82 milligrams a day of aspirin, I suggest, what do you, that
yes.
They still take it, right?
Well, I don't know. See, that's one that has to be weighed. You have to weigh the risk to benefit.
My gosh.
But I will tell you this, if somebody would like to know if they have drusen in their eye and are already forming dry macular degeneration, if you simply go to my website and click on macular degeneration tab on the website, in 15 seconds you will take an eye test that I posted for you that will show you if you have or are at the beginning stages of developing macular degeneration. And if you have family members who have had this particular disease, there is a propensity for family members genetically to have the same disease. And also, I posted the vitamins and supplements that are recommended to maintain the stability and the integrity
Super.
Of the macular on the site as well.
Good for you. Christian, thanks. MyHeartBook.com, right? That's the website. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his party, the Likud party, they have emerged victorious in the elections in Israel there. They squeaked by. It wasn't as widespread as they had hoped. Nearly a week after the terrorist attack on a natural gas field in Algeria, families and governments around the world waiting for the Algerian government to provide a full accounting of the dead and missing. So far, 37 dead, including three Americans in that situation. Next hour, Peter Lance joins us. We're going to talk about this and the blind sheik and how all this is connected. Southwest Airlines, known for open seating and boarding passengers in bunches, has announced this week that flyers can now buy a priority spot in boarding group A for $40 per flight. Southwest will put unsold slots in the A through 15 boarding group up for sale when available at the gate beginning 45 minutes before departure. Passengers will then be able to use a credit card to buy an early boarding spot. The airline tested the program in San Diego, received some positive feedback. A new venture is joining the effort to extract mineral resources on asteroids. The announcement of plans by Deep Space Industries to exploit the rare metals present in space rocks turns asteroid mining into a two-horse race now. The other venture, Planetary Resources, they went public with their proposals last year. Advocates of asteroid mining hope it can turn into a trillion-dollar business, but some scientists are highly skeptical of the idea. Robert Zimmerman, noted historian and space expert, hey, this is kind of novel, but how the heck they're going to get minerals off an asteroid, Robert?
Well, you know, George, this is very preliminary. It's the same thing with Planetary Resources. These companies are far away from actually mining anything. Both companies are in the preliminary process of setting up the infrastructure for doing things. Deep Space Industry, their goal here is they're going to use CubeSats. These are satellites that students build at universities all the time. They're maybe at most 6 inches across. They're going to build these and launch them as piggyback with other launches, and they're going to send them out to do reconnaissance. And then they'll follow up with slightly larger, but still very tiny CubeSats to do sample return missions. And they're using, for that, material right off the shelf, ion engines, this simple stuff, and that we know how to do already. And so this is very preliminary. They expect they'll get these first small CubeSats launched in the next 5-6 years, but it's going to be at least a decade before they start actually mining. And that's the same thing with Planetary Resources.
What kind of minerals are they going to go after, Robert?
Well, there's many things they can go for. For example, 10 years down the road, if they can find asteroids that have water on them, they can sell that to space explorers, the lunar colonies, etc. There's helium. They're also looking at things like nickel and iron on some of the heavy asteroids. There's even possibly platinum, precious metals. And so there's definitely materials there you can grab. But, you know,
this is a long time.
The first stage is you have to build it's like building the foundation for the house that will eventually be put into place.
Okay, Robert, thank you so much. I just can't see people mining asteroids. Maybe it'll be done in 100 or 200 years. Who knows? You know that story I had last night about the Harvard geneticist who's trying to clone a Neanderthal baby? He's just looking for the right woman who wants to volunteer. Well, today he says, hey, this has been taken out of context. That's not what I'm looking for. I'm simply saying that it's possible one day that we'll be able to do cloning like that. And he claims he was interviewed by a German newspaper and magazine. It was taken out of context. So we shall see. Smart meters. Do you have them outside your house? Well, up next, John and Pauline Holton to join us. We're going to talk about the possible dangers of smart meters next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcoming back to the program, John and Pauline Holton. They're Michigan residents. They've waged a nonstop fight against smart meters. They've been helping communities with this battle to stop the installation of what they say are invasive and dangerous technologies which can damage health, erode our civil liberties. They're back on Coast to Coast this hour. John and Pauline, how are you two?
Hi, George. How are you?
Good morning, Pauline. George. Hey, John. So how's the battle since you were on with me some time ago, almost about a year ago? Are you making a dent?
Well, we've been doing a few things. We've got more people involved. Right now we're doing the Michigan Public Service Commission, and we had some hearings this last week about the opt-out program. We do have an opt-out. We just want to try to figure out what we're going to have to pay, and that's what we're going through right now. So we had a testimony and hearings we had this week, and we got a lot to accomplish. We got a lot of the corporation to talk about exactly how much what it does and didn't cost and what they're doing to taxpayers and the whole shot. It turned out pretty good. Looks like we're going to get an opt-out. We have our next month is going to be briefing, and then after that we'll have a trial to decide exactly what we'll have to pay. But a lot of things came out in the trial.
That's just for Michigan, right?
Just for Michigan. But it's happening all over. People from all over the place are doing different things and different. Now, Vermont has an opt-out, stop the deployment SB 214 in Vermont that's going quite well. But different states are doing different things, and people are pushing hard against it.
Well, explain, if you could, both of you, what a smart meter is and how it works.
Well, George, a smart meter is basically a meter other than an analog meter that can go ahead and measure more energy consumption than the analog meter. And a lot of them use the radio frequency to go ahead and invade your home to talk to the smart chip appliances down the road. And it's going to cost you more. The radio frequency can endanger your health and safety. And the invasion with the smart chip appliances, they're going to be able to document exactly what products you use in your home, how often you use them, and possibly sell this information down the road. There's a safety issue, too. We had a fire in Ann Arbor, and DT spokesman Bob Sakakis said the smart meter didn't cause the fire. It was just the wiring behind it. And this is one of the issues we've been trying to push, is that your analog meter has been fine for, you know, decades, never cost you anything extra. It's durable, no worries or invasion your home or anything. And then all of a sudden this corporation comes in and mandates you take their meter, and it could cost you more and possibly burn your house down.
And does it save them money, John and Pauline? Does the smart meter save the utility company money because they don't need that meter reader person to come by, right?
Well, this is the issue here. You just asked a very pertinent question. Does it save the corporation money, or does it save the customer money? And the idea is that it's going to save the corporation tons of money down the road, but it's not going to save the consumer money necessarily. And even the MPSC, Michigan Public Service Commission, says that on its website, the AMI meter will not save you money. Only changing your lifestyle habits will save money.
Heck, I remember back in Missouri, Ameren and the UE, the power company, would allow you to, on a postcard, kind of scratch in your own meter readings, mail it in. They'd send one person would come out every year and audit you. And if there was a big difference, you'd pay the difference one way or another. But that worked. And I don't know why they switched to the smart meters.
Well, that's still an option here in Michigan. And it's probably that way across the country. But the thing here is they want to slice your energy consumption down to daily reads, hourly reads, minute reads, and like the peak time pricing. If you join their special rate program and you break the little rule and you use the energy excessively during that peak time, you could go from 50 cents per kilowatt hour to $4 possibly per kilowatt hour. And you're almost going to be raped by the energy company because you didn't obey the rules you contracted to do. And you won't know that till you get your bill down the road or you check on the internet with your computer to see, holy cow, you know, I made a mistake. I ran my washing machine or my dishwasher during peak time.
Yeah.
And I'm going to get an extra $15 charge on my electric bill. And that adds up when you start talking about
hundreds of
thousands of customers.
It ends up being more than the clothes that you were washing.
Well, that's the problem. The people in a poor communities, let's say like Detroit or Flint or Pontiac, that don't have computer access, don't have the iPhones and all that to monitor their daily hourly use, they may get whacked with these bills, you know, inadvertently, and they'll be paying, subsidizing this new AMI program, you know, and not even know it. They're just going to think it's rate increases. They won't know all the little nuances of how this whole system works.
No, not at all. And Pauline, tell us a little bit about the health possibilities and the issues related to smart meters.
Well, there's a lot of issues with smart meters in regards to health, in regards to nausea and constipation and heart problems. We've got people in Michigan and different parts of the country that have defibrillators, and when the smart meter would read, it would cause that to react.
Oh, boy.
And we're having a lot of problems with that, and it looks like we might have a lawyer to do some of the EMF issues, to possibly do a class action suit. But there's so many issues with people getting tumors, and even animals are getting sick and losing their hair with the technology, too. There's just so much involved with it, a lot of nosebleeds and earaches and different things, and even eye problems with the EMF situation all over the country.
And I was going to say, these smart meters are being installed everywhere, aren't they?
Yes, the digital ones. I mean, they're forcing you everywhere to have the digital ones.
Now, when you say opt-out, how does that work?
Well, there's different opt-outs in different states, but they're allowing you to. Some places are allowing you to get the analog meter back, but people really have to fight it. But the opt-out, you're going to have to pay something to get that meter off, and so much money a month. Everybody will have to do it, unless it's specified in the legislation or an opt-out smart meter bill like we're doing in Michigan.
So the power company wins out whether they take the smart meter out or not. They're going to make more money either way.
Sure, they're making all kinds of money because they get money from the federal government, too, and then they were subsidized with that, and they're going to make money on top of it with us.
I mean, they would probably make more money if everybody opted out, right?
Well, George, this is the problem we're fighting with, case U17053. They have no basis to say that the AMI meter is a good meter, that people want it. They pulled this number out of thin air. They installed 800,000 meters, and they had 1,100 complaints. So they subtract that from the 800,000, and they come up with a ratio of people who want the AMI program and people who don't want it. And they rounded it up to 4,000. They have no scientific studies either here in Michigan or across the country that say anybody wants this AMI program that's going to cost you more. The only thing we have here in Michigan is we have documentation from the resolutions and moratoriums we've gotten from the 22 cities and two counties that they definitely want an opt-out choice. They do not want to be forced to take the meter. They want to be able to make an educated, informed decision about how much they pay and whether they want to accept these liabilities of the health and cost and fires and things on their own. They want to make an educated decision. And this is what we're fighting. It's like I said, we just had the hearings, the cross-examination on that. And DTE admitted that they have no scientific evidence, I mean, as far as studies. And they admitted that they only checked a couple of sources for the analog meters. They said they don't manufacture them anymore. They still manufacture analog meters. So there is some deception going on about the real facts of the case of who wants the AMI meter and who really wants to opt out. Majority of people want to opt out. They just haven't recognized that yet.
Now, tell me specifically with this entire situation, how did you two get involved with this?
Well, we get involved with a lot. Well, it all started with the government problem. My mother died of nursing home abuse, and we actually got started years ago about that. But then we started finding out more and more stuff that's going on. And also, I got in touch with some people in California and Texas and Arizona and discovered this was coming our way. And we started getting more involved. We started doing more DVDs and doing speeches and going to different cities and talking to people about it. When we first started out, people thought we were crazy talking about this stuff, government intervening in your life and all this stuff.
Yeah.
It was really crazy. They just looked at us like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about, blah, blah, blah. But the more you talk about it, the more you talk about issues, what's going on in our country, with the vaccine and the chemtrails and everything all on top, it's a puzzle. It's all fitting together. And the final piece of the puzzle is coming up. And that's with these smart meters, because it all connects with a lot of other things, Agenda 21 and all kinds of other things.
Well, let's take some calls with you, too, when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. Smart meters, do you have them installed at your place? Have they affected you? We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you're a Coast Insider, you can participate in our chat this Wednesday night, 8 p.m. Pacific time. Nick Redfern, our special Coast to Coast guest, will be chatting. He's got a new book out called Monster Diary, so make sure you're part of it. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, John and Pauline Holton, as we talk about smart meters, RFID chips as well. And, of course, we'll take your phone calls for the remaining part of this hour. What can people do if they don't want a smart meter in their house? Let's say it's already attached. How do they get rid of it? Pauline?
Well, what I did was tell people to write letters to the company, talk about the cost, the health, the privacy, and the safety issues, and lock their meters up, because it's your meter. It's your house. It's connected to your house. They don't own your house. And people have to understand this is what we have to do. You have to get people to get into their legislative people, too, to get legislated, because probably that's the best way we're going to be able to go, besides the letters and everything, and just getting together with people and talking about the situation, what's coming, because 90% of the people that you talk to don't even know what it is and what it can do. And that's your first step, is knowledge to the people.
George?
Yeah, go ahead.
One of the most important things you have to realize here is you did not give consent to go ahead to have that new meter put on.
That's true.
If you don't want it, you're going to have to object to it at every opportunity, whether it's with your energy company, with your public utility commission, whether it's with your legislators. If you don't want that meter because you fear for your health, your safety, or the cost of it, you're going to have to rant and rave and make sure they know you don't want it, and get organized with your local city or townships, your county, then to your the capital of your state. You have to make a very conscionable effort to let them know that you do not want this and you will not accept it.
I wonder if the utility installer for the smart meters, the individual who puts them in your house, puts them on your house, I wonder if he has them or she has them on their own place. What do you think?
Well, we've talked to a few of them, and they agree with us. They worry about their job. They don't know about the actual meter itself and the effects, the cost on that, because all they do is do their job. But you come to find out in our struggles with all the resolutions, we have 22 resolutions of moratoriums and two counties. DTE actually started having their employees come to these local meetings and praising the benefits of the corporation. So they were really worried about our movement. They actually sent out letters to over 300 communities warning the cities and townships that these misinformed, well-intentioned people, generally from outside their community, were coming there to disrupt their meetings. That's how worried they were that our effort was actually going to stall their AMI installation progress.
John, is this getting much publicity nationwide?
Well, across the country, there's many states now that are having opt-out programs. And part of the problem we're having here is, like, through this hearing, we come to find out that they did not do the survey of who wanted it. The Michigan Public Service Commission went to other public service commissions and talked about the AMI program. They did not take a survey of any population, whether they want these or not. They do the cost analysis for the utilities and the public utility commissions who adjust the rates. They don't care about what the consumers really want. It has nothing to do about whether you want this product or not. It's what the
utility
corporations want and how much they're willing to pay for it.
How many people do you think know about the smart meters, know if they have one at their house?
Well,
are you talking about through the United States or Michigan or
nationwide?
Nationwide. Well, we hear from people all over the country nationwide, and I would say a lot more people are getting involved and finding out because they're having them on their homes. And they're not even, what DT said, that they were sending letters out and calling and talking to people, they're not even doing that. They're just slapping them on your home.
Oh, they just put them out. I didn't know I had one until I talked to you two back last year, and then I went and checked it.
Nobody knows. It's happening in Michigan. They said, oh, no, but they notice they have high bills. A lot of people in Michigan are just dumbfounded about the price of these high bills. It's ridiculous. I mean, our bill's gone up at least $15, $20, and we don't have the smart meter now. We had the original digital.
Is that because it's probably more accurate?
Accurate? No.
No.
Well, let me clarify that, George. See, this is the thing. They're going to put this digital meter on your home, and it captures more energy consumption than the old electrical mechanical meter, the analog meter. That means it's going to cost you more.
Right.
It's in plain old English, it's going to cost you more. But this is the opt-out option. The EMI program, which costs you more, or the digital meter, which costs you more. So there is no benefit to the consumer, period. It's going to cost you more. So the only thing you can do is keep fighting to keep your analog meter. And the majority of people want to keep their analog meter. That's what all our resolutions and moratoriums have said. Every time that DTE came to the communities to discuss the benefits of the AMI program, we passed a resolution and moratorium to opt out. That's on the record. I listed the cities, like five cities in the hearing this last week. And with each city I mentioned, he said, yes, they passed the resolution. Yes, they passed the resolution there. And that was the case. We have almost 100% record of people wanting to opt out, and they have no record of anybody that wants an AMI meter. Huh. All they have is a record of people who have them installed on their home.
Let's go to the phones. We'll go east of the Rockies. Tom is in La Quinta, Florida. Hey, Tom, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hello, George. I'm listening on WXJB-FM.
Super. Thank you.
I had a question concerning the telephones, the cell phones, as compared to the smart meters.
Yeah.
I believe they're both operating in the 900 megahertz range, and I'm just wondering what the RF exposure comparison would be, and does the FCC have guidelines as to the emissions of these smart meters?
John, Pauline, what do you think?
Well, let's go to the FCC guidelines. Those are based on thermal effects of the radio frequency. And they use the cell phone, which is, you're talking about a few centimeters on the head exposure compared to full body exposure. And we're talking about non-thermal effects, not thermal effects. And there are no long-term studies on the non-thermal effects of radio frequency exposure on a human being. If you look up Barry Trower, the scientist, he talks about the DNA damage that radio frequency can do to the eggs that a young girl carries in her body throughout her life. In her formative years, how sensitive it could be. And you could have DNA damage to your grandchildren, great-grandchildren by the radio frequency. The problem with all this is, like the precautionary principle, we should err on the side of caution with all of this until we know exactly what the repercussions will be from all this RF exposure. I wouldn't want to take a chance with anybody's life or their children's life if there's a possibility that this could go ahead and harm them.
Is this worse than being under a high power line?
Pauline, you want to cover that? You want me to?
I'll let you, because you know more about electrical stuff.
Well, see, this is the thing. There were studies done here some years back. We had a big to-do about these cows who were getting affected by the ground current from the high power tension lines. The cows would actually almost dance because they'd feel the eddy currents in the ground. Jeez. It would make them shock them and make them jump.
Yeah.
There are no, like I said, long-term studies on the general population or the EMF, because it hasn't become an issue to the general population yet. Now that they're going to take this radio frequency meter and put it on everybody's home, and have smart shift appliance talking to it in their home, Can you just think about how much radio frequency is going to be in your neighborhood from your house to house in your home? It's going to be like a huge net or fog hanging over your community, and you won't be able to get away from it.
It's going to be everywhere.
First time.
Well, too, what about the EMF people that are sensitive to all this stuff, or people like me with chemical sensitive? I have a lot of problems with that. There's people all over the country. I have a conference call that I do twice a month, and you would not believe the stories that people talk about. They can't even live in their homes because of all the stuff that's coming through the walls from EMF and stuff, from all this different stuff that people have, and the amount of people are suffering from it. And like Bill Deagle out of California, the same thing. He had it. Now he's super sensitive. He can hardly go into a grocery store.
How do people know, Pauline, that it's because of the smart meter that might be affecting them?
Well, how do they know? Because there's so many things that happen to them, you know, like dizziness or sensitivity. Like me, I got shocked with different things because of the Wi-Fi that we had in our computer room with the smart meter. Between the two of them, it's hard to disseminate. Which is it.
How soon do some of these symptoms kick in?
Oh, some people had them right away. I had a lady that had nosebleeds and earaches right away. And another lady had her face break out and her eyebrows missing. And the guy that from Novi, a friend of mine, Don Fleming, when he got his in, he noticed it right away when it was checking the readout on it that the defibrillator would start to go off.
All right, let's take a couple more calls here. We'll come right back to you. Lucy in Toronto, Canada, first-time caller. Hi, Lucy. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for the show. I've got to say I'm calling from Canada, and I don't know about the rest of Canada, but I'm pretty sure Ontario, it's mandatory, and everybody has had it installed. But prior to the installation, they sent out a bunch of literature saying it was on the way and saying they were going to introduce time-of-day billing, broke it down on a wheel graph. So everybody, it's very easy to understand when the best time to use your power is. They made it quite simple that way. But after it was installed, I've not heard of really the symptoms that I should be looking for, and I have no computer, but the thing I noticed is that since May, I haven't had a reading. They've just been estimating my bill, so I've called just the other day, and they explained that to me, that there's something wrong with their remote reading, so I called today and offered to read it out to them, and they said, no, we don't want to take your reading because we need the other information about when you've used it, so maybe that's why they want these smart meters, so that they can tell when you've used what, how many kilowatt hours you've used and what time of day that they were used.
But
is there no way of instituting that with a different non-harmful machine like the analog? Could they break it down in that analog reader to time of use?
Probably not. I don't think the analog is that sophisticated, John. It works well, but I don't think it can give you that kind of data, can it?
No, this is one of the issues. Okay, the analog meter, like I said, it was a stone. It was always there, just doing its job day in and day out. You know, efficient. Everybody, you know, you could take those dates. Remember that postcard you talked about?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you could send in your own readings, they trusted you. There's no ifs, ands, or buts.
Yeah, and they settled up with you later anyways if you made a mistake.
No problem. But the problem is nowadays with all this critical new technology is they're going to want to go ahead, and if you don't pay your bill, they're going to know how much you have in your bank, whether you're able to pay it or not, and they're going to be able to remotely shut it off. They had today we had 2,200 people in our area without power. When they get the smart meter on your home and you haven't paid your bill, they can selectively just say, turn off the Jones's house. He hasn't paid his bill. And then you're going to have to fight to get your power turned back on.
No, you're right. Now, the 2,200 without power, that was because of the high winds and the cold snap.
That's what they say.
That happened 2 days ago.
I had to call my mom in Detroit to make sure she was okay.
Days ago, we had high winds. Last night, there was no high winds. That midnight, we lost our power.
Interesting.
I had to get my generator out and fire us on up, so it's 5 degrees above zero here.
Probably, signaling you two out. Let's go to David in Reno, Nevada. Hey, Dave, go ahead.
George, by any measure, you're truly a treasure. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, my poet. You know it.
10 years, what a great milestone. Terrific.
Thanks.
Okay, my story is they came to my house in June or July of 2012 and knocked on my door, the guy from the energy company, and he said, I'm here to install your meter. And I said, I don't want that, because I had heard your show with the with these two
yep.
previous to that. And I, you know, and then I did some reading about it. I was like, I don't want that crap. So I told him, I go, do not go. I got a big dog back in, over there. You know, don't go near my yard, in my fence. I don't want that thing on my house. And they didn't put it on, and I haven't noticed anything on my bill. I'm going to look a little closer at my next bill. But I experienced once, I lived in Colorado before here, and I lived in a cabin, and it had a smart meter on it. And it got real cold, like 10 below zero one night, and it, and I had no heat. I was freezing. And I called the next day, and they said, yeah, you've been limited on your power in peak hours. And yeah. I was like, what? I'm freezing my yeah. butt off here. I'm sleeping in bed with sweats on and a robe with two covers. You know, you're limiting my power. I'm paying the bill. So they can limit your power.
That is amazing.
You bet.
And I'll turn it loose here so you can wrap it up with you guys. But I just wanted to congratulate you, George, and tell you my story.
All right. That's a great story. It's amazing what they can do with a push of a button, John.
That's what they can, yeah.
Well, see, this is the issue. If you have a bad heart, if you have a health issue, and they turn down your heat or they turn down your air conditioning, and you have you're harmed from that, who's going to be liable for that? This is the issue.
That's a good point.
You know, with the MPSC, we found out that the meter belongs to Detroit Energy. It's their meter. It's their application to put it on you, force it on you. It's a corporate business venture. So you will probably have to sue them down the road for these things. When you go to the opt-out program, though, you're signing a contract giving up your benefits, which means you're going to accept the liabilities of this new meter. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They're having you sign a contract, which means that you will probably no longer be able to sue them if your house burns down, if you get ill from the meter or any of that.
Let's go to Vicki in Paramount, California, wildcard line. Vicki, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hello.
I'm glad to get through to you finally after like 10 years.
Oh, boy. Only got about a minute for you, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, a whole bunch of us have gotten together, and we had the smart meters were put on our homes. We've had been lethargic, headaches, and you can hear buzzing in your ears. Now the gas company's coming around wanting to put smart meters.
Yeah.
And I've been kind of staving them off, so now I'm getting little notes on my door every day about that, but we don't know what to do to fight it. I mean, everybody's like feeling like sluggish and having headaches. The animals are acting strange, and I just don't know what we can do about it.
What can we do, Pauline? Can you call them and say, get it out?
Well, no, you have to stop it to begin with. That's the whole point. You have to stop the beginning process. Keep your analog. You got to do the best you can. You've got to get your people, like I said earlier, get your people together, go to your council meetings, demand they do a moratorium or ordinance or something to stop it. And legislation is very important to do in your states. A lot of states are doing it to stop this. That's the only way. If you don't get your Public Service Commission to do an investigation like we did the two of them, U-17,000, U-17,053, that's going to be impossible to work with any of this.
Well, let's monitor this. We've got your website linked up at coasttocoastam.com for people who want more information on smart meters. It's happening all around this country, perhaps the planet. It's in Canada. It's everywhere. Do what you think you have to do. We'll be back in a moment. Peter Lance joins us. We'll talk about the blind sheik. What does it all mean on Coast to Coast AM?